Huntsville, Texas, death penalty capital of the Western world, where prison staff is preparing to put Murphy to death by injecting him with a deliberate drug overdose. During the next hour, KPFT's Execution Watch will air live coverage of the killing in Texas, the state that has carried out a third of U.S. executions. Execution Watch host Marlo Blue, criminal defense attorneys Larry Douglas, Pat McCann, and Merrill Pontier, Huntsville reporter outside the death house Linda Snyder, general reporter Clinton Young, plus the possibility of a special interview with Murphy, recorded recently on death row. The execution watch for Jedediah Murphy begins.
Welcome. Tonight, the state of Texas ushers Jedediah Murphy into the death chamber. To our listeners around the world, thank you for joining us on this Tuesday, October the 10th edition of Execution Watch. I'm Marlo Blue. If you're tuning in for thanks on KPFT Houston, they'll be back next week in their brand new time slot, Tuesday at 6 o'clock. Execution Watch is brought to you in part by the Clinton Young Foundation, and it is produced by a dedicated staff of volunteers. Please go to kpft.org and pledge your support to us now, as we report live each and every night an execution is scheduled in the state of Texas. The live stream of the show can be found right now on our Facebook page as well, and we thank Houston Media Source, as always, for simulcasting. During tonight's broadcast, we will be giving you details about the case, including background surrounding the trial and conviction. We will have expert legal analysis, as well as live reports from Huntsville and breaking news regarding any last-minute judicial action. And we will hear from our newest reporter, who himself is a former death row inmate. So, tonight, the state of Texas will execute Jedediah Murphy for the October 2000 death of 80-year-old Bertie Lee Cunningham during a carjacking in the Dallas suburb of Garland. He will be the sixth person to be executed by the state of Texas in 2023. Joining us first tonight is our reporter stationed just outside of the death house in Huntsville, Texas, activist Linda Snyder. But before we go to Linda, I want to remind our listeners and viewers that this is a live broadcast. And while we do our best to keep the background audio clean, it can get very loud and sometimes a bit difficult for our reporters to be able to hear us and to tell their story. So bear with us. Hello, Linda. Thank you for joining us. We are waiting for Linda to stand by and to hear us as we do that. You can see that we have on our split screen of the Zoom, we have Linda Snyder and Merrill Pontier. Merrill, if we can't quite get Linda to hear us.
I had to pick the rev up, so she came back.
Linda. Linda. Linda.
Yeah, driving to Livingston.
Linda.
Where do they live?
Let's go to Merrill Pontier first, if you all don't mind, while we try and get Linda via the text so that she knows that she's on the air. Merrill, how are you this evening? So, and I'm also going to bring in Larry at this point in time. This is just the most amazing sequence of events. I can't really figure out what's going on. Can you explain to us what's happening? As we try to get them both on, let's go to Larry Douglas here in the studio.
Was that a question? Was that a question for me or for Larry?
I'm sorry, Merrill. It was for you.
Okay. I'm still kind of in shock. I did not think they were going to lift this stay, especially not like 15 minutes before 6 after the Fifth Circuit issued a stay. I'm kind of in shock. I've not seen this before.
We're not able to process it, so I would really like yours and Larry's input on this. This is just astounding. Larry?
Oh, I agree.
What do you have to say to us today?
Marlo, I'm also astounded. It seems we've never been in this position before that I can recall. Normally, we're waiting to see if there's going to be a stay. In this instance, there was a stay, and the stay was then vacated, which I thought it would not be vacated. I thought it would not be lifted. As we've already talked about, at least not 15 minutes before the time for the execution was scheduled for.
Right.
And the filings seem very persuasive to me, such that I suspected that the stay would not be vacated, would not be lifted. But we're here. Mm. It has been vacated or lifted. So in the state of Texas, one filed the request to vacate the stay, mm-hmm. and then continued to operate, prepare for the execution, as though the stay were going to be vacated. Their plan was, we don't want to be caught flat-footed if the stay gets vacated,
right?
And then we cannot proceed with the execution since we've already got the warrant to perform the execution. So they were being very aggressive in terms of trying to get this matter completed. And it surprises me just to some degree that they would be that aggressive and that persistent.
Well, Merrill, we've been going back and forth with you most of the afternoon about this, too. Besides being surprised, is there any precedent for this that either of you know about?
I know of.
Yeah.
It's not a totally, I don't know the precedents here in Texas, but this kind of legal proceedings, it's pretty normal if you want to try to get something done. That is, the request for the stay, okay, was very well reasoned at a time when it should have been filed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reasonable thing for the state to have done if they want to get the matter completed would be to file a motion to vacate the stay. They didn't have to, okay, but that's a fairly aggressive position, like I've told you before. That's a fairly aggressive position for them to take. And when you look at the filings, the granting of the stay and the leaving the stay in place to get the issues that were still outstanding just made a lot of sense to allow the stay to remain in effect. But again, you have litigants. One takes one side, one takes the other.
Mm, right. Anything to add to that?
Yeah. Well, it's like Larry says, normally you wait for a stay at this time, not to live to stay. And I think, if I remember correctly, we've seen this with the federal executions. I remember one case where they actually lifted a stay after 6. And I remember being so in shock of that. And other than that, I've not seen that. But I remember with the federal executions under Trump, I've seen that happening, and I remember everybody being just as much in shock then as I guess we are now.
Right. I can understand that a little. Let's see if we can go to Linda Snyder in Huntsville for a moment. Linda, can you hear us now?
I can hear you.
Thank you very much. You're our reporter there. You're right outside of the death house in Huntsville, Texas. Can you tell me a little bit about what's going on there? Are you all, how many people are out there with you today, first of all?
There's probably, let's see, probably about 30 people.
That's a good number for that many people for protesting it. And
yes.
Tell me a little bit about the scene and what people are saying there, if you don't mind.
Well, we're just all confused about how the courts are going, because it seems like it's like they're in an argument if they're going to vacate or not vacate.
Right.
And so it's confusing to all of us.
You know, you actually are friends with Jedediah, is that correct?
Correct.
And you know his wife. Can you tell us a little? Have you spent some time with us? Can you give us a little bit of indication of his state of mind right now? or
well,
this morning?
He was in real good spirits today when I talked to him on the phone, and I was at the hospitality house here in Huntsville, mm-hmm. and I was with his wife, and she brought the phone to me and told me that, you know, he wanted to talk to me, and he seemed really happy, and I was surprised, you know, because I expected him to be like most of the guys when this happens. They're really sad, you know, but he was upbeat. He said they fed him really good. He had this real big juicy hamburger, and he said it was great. And, you know, I don't know. I was just surprised. He was really upbeat. And I could tell when his wife was talking to him, too, that their conversation was real lively, you know. It wasn't sad like I would think it would be. It was, they were laughing and talking and, you know, just like they would normally do any other day.
Right. And so you actually have seen his wife. What is his wife's name?
It's Vivian Swartz.
So you've actually been in contact with her, and she is there in Huntsville.
All the time. I mean, her and I are friends, and I spend a lot of time with her when she comes down. She has an apartment here that she's had for years, and she, you know, stays in that apartment, and then she, you know, flies back home to North Carolina.
Wow. And how long has she and Jedediah been married? Do you know approximately?
I don't know approximately how long they've been married, but it's been quite a few years.
Yeah, it's been a while now for sure.
Yeah, and she's they're very much in love.
Oh.
And it's really a sweet relationship they have.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with KPFT's The Prison Show, Linda and Danny Allen are a group called the Death Row Angels. And you are really one of our conduits to people who are on the row. And approximately how many people do you correspond with on a daily basis, Linda?
Well, probably about 10. Yeah, I get about 10 calls every day from different ones. And I just love the guys. I mean, they're human beings. They're, you know, everybody thinks of them as being monsters, but they're not. They're very, very, they know they've done wrong, and they know that, you know, they really changed. And I just love visiting with them. They're very, they make me feel really good.
Well, we know that it's on record that Jedediah has said that he is extremely sorry for what has happened. We've certainly heard that enough. And
yes,
I'm glad to hear that you believe him. And that's,
yeah. That's, yes, I believe him.
Tell us, for those who don't have the visuals that we have, tell us what signal you will be looking for to let us know that the execution has started.
We would look back here, and we see them walking across the street, then we know that it's going on.
And are there any other signals that you're specifically looking for that you'll be keeping an eye out for?
Not really, because the guards just stand here. They don't move. They don't say anything. We just have to keep watching that door over there.
Right. I know there's often a very aggressive groups of people against you all who make it a little more difficult for you to do your vigils. Is that happening tonight?
Yes, and they didn't block the road. They never blocked the road off, so cars are driving through here, and some of them drive real fast. It's kind of scary, but this is where we have to be, you know, in order to protest. They've got a thing, you know, with ropes and everything where we can't go in, you know, any closer to the door.
Well, thank you so much, Linda. Please let us know when.
I will go.
Thank you very much. That was Linda Snyder. She's an activist. She is our reporter in Huntsville, and she will let us know when the execution is moving ahead. Let's go back now to our panel, to Larry Douglas, our chief legal analyst. Tell me,
hey.
And to Clinton Young. It sounds like Clinton Young is also joining us. Hi,
yeah,
hello, Clinton.
If you're in the background, excuse me, I'm driving a double Palma, taking oil field equipment, 24-wheeler actually. But look, I'm not surprised because Alito's over the Fifth Circuit. And so, I mean, you know, it just, things ain't going to be like they used to be a lot of times, right? And so, but again, nothing the folks do really surprise me anymore, but especially the AG's office involved in it.
We
but
see.
Yeah, it's a, I imagine that's an emotional roller coaster, right? Normally you see like a district court give a stay and then the Fifth Circuit take it away or the CCA will take it away or, but it's not so common for the Fifth Circuit to actually rule in somebody's favor and then the Supreme Court go against the Fifth Circuit because they're, I mean, they're notoriously so conservative.
Yeah, conservative, that is exactly the word, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, normally they overturn the Ninth Circuit the most because, you know, that's considered the most liberal circuit in the U.S.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court's been fairly conservative for the last, you know, 30 years or so.
Do you all think we have a more aggressive attorney general in the state of Texas right now than in past times?
And because all the stuff that we got away with because the House didn't do things a certain way, plus it was a stacked case regardless, right? My lawyers were the ones that prosecuted that case. And so the hearsay laws and things like this, and there was a lot of stuff that couldn't come out. But, hold up. But, I think Tim Paxton's going to be emboldened now. I mean, he was unhinged before. And so now he's unbeaten impeachment. I mean, he's just going to be that much more aggressive, if at all possible, I mean, more than he already was.
Right. Clinton, did you know Jedediah?
Do you know Jedediah? Did you ask me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I knew Jedediah.
Can you tell us a little?
I'm not sure that I first got there.
Tell us a little bit about him.
Oh man, you know, he was cool, man. He was real creative, right? Super smart. Super smart, well read guy, right? Like we listen to Jeopardy and play Jeopardy and I mean Randy Halpern likes to say he could beat me today, but that's not true. But old Jeopardy and Rick Rose, they give me a run for my money, right? He wasn't what you consider dangerous. I mean,
well, that is the question, you know, right, now. Do you think he would be a future danger? I mean, that's really the question at hand right now, right?
No, I wouldn't, right? I mean, he was chill, right? I mean, if he got in trouble, it's just from little miscellaneous things, right? Nothing ever major. He never had any assaults or use of forces or, you know, he wasn't starting fires and flooding and things like that. But, he was on level one. Half majority of the time he was there. I mean, I said he had a disciplinary record for petty things.
Can you please explain to our listeners about the different levels? Clinton, can you please explain?
Yeah. Well, let me know. You gotta know how to hit that mute button, sweetheart. Linda.
Yes.
Mute it.
Mute button.
Oh.
Mute button, darling. But explain what disciplinary level is?
Yeah, please. We don't really understand.
Yeah, if you get a rule infraction, then they punish you even more than you're already punished by being on death row and being in solitary confinement and all that stuff. Basically, they minimize your recreation. Depends what you go for, level three or level two. They reduce the amount of visits you can have. You can't have commissary, such as like food. You can't have your radio. You can't have typewriter, things like that.
Right.
Like the little bit of stuff they give you that you can enjoy on level one, you can't have none of that stuff. Basically, just stamps and state products. I mean, I guess to put it in the most simplest form, it's jail and jail.
Jail and jail. That's Does not sound good. It really doesn't. We are looking at the same issue now. We're still waiting to hear what's happening, not only with the Supreme Court, but in Huntsville itself.
So hold up. Did the Supreme Court, this all, I'm confused right here. Okay, and I'm looking at the time.
Yeah.
And it's 6:20.
Yep.
And so, has no witnesses crossed the road?
Nothing has happened yet. No witnesses have crossed the road.
Maybe he just didn't want somebody witnesses to say, but I mean, the Supreme Court listed the state, right?
They listed one of the states. But there...
Oh, we got two states?
Yes. And herein is the the confusion. And we don't...
So he got to stay on... So what you're saying is he got to stay on two different issues.
Correct.
Okay, and they denied one, but they're still looking at another.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
So did the state get lifted for the DNA issue and the future dangerousness?
I believe it was for the drug issue that the, I believe.
That's my understanding also.
Yeah.
But we're still feel very confused.
Okay, look, I mean, with this, the political setup that we have right now as far as the judicial system and where the Fifth Circuit is, I mean, I'm not trying to take away his hope or anything like that, but that drug issue is dead in the water, right? I mean, so many people done try to litigate it over and over again. And so, I mean...
Well, I'm not sure that this wasn't something different. And Clinton, I think this was slightly different because they are saying that a fire that was near the pharmacies may have impaired the drugs. That's my understanding.
That is correct.
You know.
Yeah. But see, here's Alito was one of the people that ruled when it came to the execution drugs. Whenever they brought up lethal injection and tried to say it was cruel and unusual punishment. And the line of question that him and Scalia had about that, you know, they asked, was hanging unconstitutional? Was this unconstitutional? Was that unconstitutional? And so you could tell by Alito's thinking based on the questions they asked in that case. And it all revolved around, so what? I mean, that's their line of thinking. That's not our line of thinking. I agree. I mean, if they're going to kill you, it's supposed to be at least in the most humane manner possible because they're supposed to be better than we are. You know, we are supposed to be the immoral ones, you know, the murderers and things like that on death row. And so they're supposed to adhere to this higher moral code. And so they're supposed to treat us better than, say, how we treated our victims, supposedly, right? And, you know, that's the whole idea of monster ball. You know, the last cigarette, the last meal, and things like that. The final visit. Is to say that they hold a higher moral ground. So, the idea that they would execute somebody in a cruel manner in modern times, or one that with excessive pain, is supposed to go against that moral code. But Alito being over the fifth, being over this region, this circuit, and you look at his responses to things, the opinion he's given. I mean, it's just not. It'd be different if it was Kavanaugh. Or maybe one of the other justices who are also conservative, but anything comes out of Thomas or Alito's mouth, I ain't got no faith in them at all, right?
Mm. Right.
Especially when it comes to the death penalty. I mean, it's just sad but true, right? I mean, it's just, you know, the way Scalia said, he's dead now, but he said, no innocent person's ever been executed in America. And so, Scalia and Alito were, you know, two peas in a pod.
Can you give us...
I'm just saying that, I mean, hopefully somebody can come up with something different, but I'm just saying, like, you know, the unfortunate nature of who we have over in the Fifth Circuit, everybody on death row knows it's not going to benefit us in any shape, form, or fashion.
Especially in the state of Texas, eh?
Yeah. Especially coming out of Texas.
That's right. Well, you know, everything about Jedediah was a little different, so I guess we really shouldn't be surprised that this is a little different.
Yeah.
You know, I am thrilled to hear that Jedediah...
Sure was, never spoken.
Yeah, exactly. For our listening audience, I do want you to know that if the execution does go on, we have a video that we will not be able to air in its entirety here on Execution Watch if that does happen. And if it does happen, we will post it on YouTube so that you can see Jedediah Isaac Murphy's last words and last interview with KPFT. But as we have made a promise to him that unless we knew that the execution was being carried out, we will not air that interview at this time. So stay with us. Let's talk a little bit more about how we got to this point. Larry, talk a little bit about this case. Why is Jedediah there?
Right. And Marlo, regarding the video, as we know, we don't air the video. And we hope we don't ever have to air the video.
Hope you never see it.
But in this case, you have been referring to him. You called his whole name, Jedediah Isaac Murphy. About as Jewish a name as you can get. And historically, within the Jewish community, particularly in biblical times, that the names are extremely important. And a name like Jedediah, you don't see them walking around every day. Hmm. But this is a name that in the Bible was one of the other names for the wisest king, Solomon. Okay, Jedediah meaning beloved of the Lord. And Solomon being Shalom, like peace. Isaac, okay, that's the other name. We know who that is. So he's one of the very few Jews on Texas death row. I think Alan Dershowitz said that there might be two. But it's unusual for a person of Jewish background to be in this kind of situation. It's a fairly, like all murders, it's a very, very tragic story. He was a troubled youth. While he... His Jewish background, but he spent some time in foster care where he appears to have been abused, and he got on drugs, and he had some minor criminal activity he got involved in, burglary of a motor vehicle, burglary of a habitation, nothing of great violence until, okay, and that until was October the 4th. Back in 2000, where he encountered a tragic encounter between him and Bertie Cunningham, an elderly lady, 79, 80 years old. For whatever reason, he carjacked her and drove her around Garland, Texas, a suburb of Dallas. Had her drive him for about 30 minutes or so, just driving around. Then he tells her to get into the trunk. Before she gets into the trunk, he shoots her. And then he starts driving around by himself, spending using the credit cards that she had, buying alcohol and cigarettes and just hanging out. He shoots her, but she doesn't die. So he drives outside of Dallas County to Van Zandt County, about 75 miles away, and he dumps her in a lake, in a stream, and she actually, the cause of death was apparently drowning. So this was in 2000. They tried him in 2001. We got to trial really quick, mainly because it was a fairly simple case. He confessed to everything when he hadn't confessed. And he was found guilty by a jury. So having been found guilty, the issue is this is a capital murder which the state can decide whether they want to pursue it as a capital or not. But commission of a felony offense, murder occurs, they can decide, and they did decide in this case, we're going to pursue this as a capital and seek the death penalty. So having been found guilty, the issues on the penalty phase is really life or death. And for them to seek death, they have to show the critical issue is future dangerousness. Is he going to be of a future danger? So his background was probably not sufficient to get death on the small cases he had been convicted of. But while the case was pending, one other lady comes forward and says, "That's the gal kidnapped me years ago." And I remember, but she couldn't identify him initially. But by the time she's testifying at the punishment phase, she knows who he is. This is the person who kidnapped me and drove me around the same way. Another woman comes forward and says, "Yeah, he kidnapped me too, but I managed to get out." The first lady says, "No," and she testified at the punishment phase. The first lady says, "You know, he kidnapped me, and I was able to jump out of the moving car at a high rate of speed. And oh, I was just so petrified. You know, I still have nightmares right now." And she testified very convincingly to the jury. Now that was that testimony was so compelling that the jury was extremely moved by that. And there's a strong belief that that's that kind of testimony. This is on punishment. All prior bad acts, whether they have been prosecuted or found guilty of, can be brought in. You know, you stole a bicycle from a kid when you were 9 years old. That's a bad act. They can bring that in. And his counsel did not strongly refute all that evidence in terms of those unproven allegations. And in one phase of the appellate procedure, the counsel even came forward and just fell on the sword and says, "Look, he confessed ineffective assistance of counsel, saying I was just burnt out and I missed a lot of things and so forth." But that claim did not succeed. So he gets convicted, and a few months ago, earlier this year, the case law changes over time. And there are cases that the court is looking at saying the law now is that DNA evidence, seeking leave of court to obtain DNA evidence is allowed on the guilt-innocence phase of the trial, but not on the punishment phase. So his lawyer said, "Well, there's a case that came up right now. The court is looking at that. So if the court is looking at that, why don't we look at it in this case? Because we can disprove now with DNA, convincingly disprove with DNA, that he was not the person who did the kidnapping. In fact, we've got records of him being on his job. We've got timesheets where he was at work at this time." Well, of course, looks at that. So, well, you had those timesheets. Well, you could have had those timesheets back in 2001. But court, we could not have the DNA. So we need time. Let's get a stay. And the DNA evidence is the critical thing. If we can get that DNA evidence, that would be convincing proof that he did not commit those extraneous, unadjudicated offenses. And that was what gave me the most hope when I read over that. So that makes a lot of sense for them to, particularly if that is true, if the DNA disproves his guilt of those unadjudicated offenses, then I think he's got a real good shot at getting this thing overturned. Well, this is what the U.S. Supreme Court today decided, that we're going to not lift that stay. We're not going to vacate the stay. So the stay, we did vacate the stay, okay, to allow the execution to continue. And that's the thing that concerns me the most. And the other thing, we're reading an article that Alan Dershowitz got involved in a matter, and his concern was that we're looking at future dangerousness, but the future from 2000 is now. He's been in TDC for 20 years, not been a problem at all. Confessed, I would submit, repented. As he became a practicing Jew, he has been working with other inmates, getting them to turn their lives around, and all of that is being pointed out now. That, you know, what harm would it do to at least take another look at, take a look at the DNA to see this very persuasive evidence of future danger? The unadjudicated cases establishing a pattern of him, of someone kidnapping elderly ladies in the same fashion. And in this case, he killed an elderly. He admits all of that, confessed all of that. And that disappoints me considerably, that we are apparently going to put this man to death under this set of circumstances.
For those of you who are listening on KPFT, thank you for joining us. This is a special broadcast. It is Execution Watch. We are broadcasting live from the Houston Media Source studios here in Houston and from Huntsville, where we have our reporter on the scene. We are waiting to hear if the execution for Jedediah Murphy has started. And if you are tuning in to listen to Thanks, please check back next week. It will be in its regular time slot at 6 p.m. What happens, and I'm going to ask this question to all three of you, when lawyers working on capital punishment cases get burned out?
You get executed. That's what happens. Yeah. I mean, people don't have the best lawyers.
Okay, I'm on.
Hello. Let's go right now to Linda Snyder in Huntsville. Linda, what can you tell us? Hello.
Nothing is going on. I mean, there's no one has crossed the line, so they still have something holding.
We will check back with our producer and in the control room. Thank you so much, Linda. Just keep on letting us know what's happening, okay?
I will.
Thank you so much.
You know, Marlo.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so many horror stories of guys down there on the road. They end up coming up with great evidence that would help them at trial, but because their lawyer made a mistake, then they're going to execute them because of a lawyer's mistake. I mean, there's just case after case after case after case and if you try to do something yourself, like you're in court, you try to stand up and speak out, and the judge admonishes you, tells you, sit down and shut up. All right, don't take you out the courtroom, and all this, that, and the other. You try to file pro se, they say it's hybrid representation. And so they put all these rules in place to keep us from speaking up for ourselves, especially when you have a court-appointed attorney. You know, they say that you don't have a right to an attorney of your choosing. It just has to fit the criteria. And so whenever these attorneys, they do horrible jobs, former prosecutors, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Jerome Govich, attorney out of Houston, he sent more people to death row in Texas as a defense attorney than he did as a prosecutor. And so it's something that people don't really come to appreciate as far as the general public goes, right?
Well, it's another aspect of it, for sure, Clinton, because we don't see that day-to-day grind. You know, the public will see that it sometimes takes a prisoner 23, 25 years to go through the systems, and they don't understand from the legal aspects of why it's taking so long in their minds.
What?
Or the
it's
burnout.
Not defendant's fault.
No, of course not.
You know, when I talk to the House of Representatives, I brought that point up. They always want to try to pass these laws, and I thought it's a couple of one-on-one about this. You know, they want to, the DA's Association in Texas goes to them and tells them, hey, you know, we need to do something to speed this up. These guys are on death row for 20, 30, 40 years in some cases. But it's not our fault.
Right.
It's prosecutors doing misconduct, lawyers doing inadequate jobs, our judges sitting on the case.
Right.
Rick Rhodes, Mary Recipe, was in out of Houston, Texas. Right. He sat in Harris County District Court for 18 years.
Yes, he did.
You know, I mean, he wasn't complaining about that, of course, but I'm saying that, it's frustrating to me because, like, it's so arbitrary. Like, if he would have been from a different county, he might not have got the death penalty. Or the prosecutor might have sided with him on appeal, and he could have got relief.
Well, there's no doubt that Harris County has always been sort of a conduit straight into death row and to the execution chamber. It seems to be something we have taken great pride in for many years. So, well, I hope we change all
of
that.
Yeah, there's something sick. You know, they think crime and killing somebody, right? Like,
right. right. So, let's, again, you know, we're talking a little bit about how different everything about this Jedediah Murphy case really is. But he's always been different. He was different when he got to the row. He's the only, well, I guess Randy Halpern is Jewish as well. And
hey, he said there's only two Jewish people on death row.
I think that's right. Yeah.
That was an article. That was an article by Alan Dershowitz.
That's, only two, huh?
That's what Dershowitz said.
Okay.
We'll attribute it to him. He has some
people. People on the row hear me say that. My little laugh about that, right? Like they get what I'm laughing about. But Randy Halpern's the other one.
Randy.
Jedediah Murphy and Randy Halpern. There has been a couple others though, Doug Thelman and Max Sofar.
Mm-hmm. Max. Well, but is it true that Jedediah is the only one who's ever been bar mitzvahed in the TDCJ?
I don't know about that.
I'd like to find out if that's true.
I don't know because Max Sofar was there in the 80s.
Yeah.
Max Sofar most likely had his in approval.
He probably had his at the right time. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, when you give a say like that, and I've been around people that got a say, and they take it away. It's an emotional torture, is what it is. You know, there's some guys that have execution dates. It has 7 or 8 different execution dates.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's torture, right? I mean, they put you through all that. I get that CDC is going to go through the steps because the execution has to take place before midnight or the warrant expires. So that's why TDC is going to take the condemned man to the walls unit because they only have so much time, things like that, right?
But the warrant is just a piece of paper. And we're talking about a person's life.
Yeah, believe me, I understand that. Completely. But that piece of paper carries a lot of weight. Unfortunately.
Let's check back in a little bit.
All these legal opinions.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Trees have been killed for less. Linda Snyder, if we can get you back on just for an update in Huntsville, let's go to our reporter Linda Snyder, who is in Huntsville. Have you seen any activity outside of the death house?
No activity at all.
Nothing. No one's. Nothing. So I believe you've got Gloria Rubick there with you. Do you have you guys discussed what would happen? What do you think is going to happen next?
I think he's probably going to get that stay. I think they're probably going to keep him staying the stay, is what I think.
So, well, we have about 10 more minutes of broadcast time here at KPFT Execution Watch before we have to hand it over to Nuestra Palabras. Please let us know if anything, if there's any movement or if you come up with any theories. We would appreciate okay. that, too. What's up, Clinton?
YouTube before, if they didn't have, if the Supreme Court has not issued an opinion, I think it was by like 11 o'clock, then CDC will automatically stay the proceedings.
Okay.
10:30 or 11 o'clock, the CDC will stay the proceedings. They did it in a guy's case. If I'm not mistaken, it might be in Rolando Ruiz.
I don't remember that one.
Because they say they need time to go over everything, like to go through the procedures and account for if anything goes wrong and stuff like that. But again, that was it's a different administration now. So,
what do you mean by a different administration?
Well, I mean, there was a different executive director back then. You had a different.
Are you?
I think. Yeah, I think you had a different attorney general, and he wasn't much better than Abbott. But that's what I'm saying, is just all the people, the whole chain of command for TDC Day was different. And so I don't know what their policy, if that policy is still in place or not.
Okay. Meryl, you've been awfully quiet tonight, and I know you always have some good things to tell us. What's on your mind? Meryl.
You're talking to me, right, Merlo?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. No, I was listening to Clint talk, and he's right that defendants always get blamed for, attorneys who mess up at trial. And when I was listening to Larry talk about this case, and he said that Jedediah being convicted or sentenced to death because of these extraneous offenses that he was not convicted for. And, you always see when someone gets arrested for, kidnapping or you see that in sexual assault cases too, and suddenly other alleged victims stand up and say, oh, he's done that to me too. And you always have to, as a defense attorney, approach that with great caution.
Right.
Because more often than not, they're wrong on that. And they think they recognize someone because that person is on TV in, an orange jumpsuit, arrested and being accused of horrendous things. And then they probably have been through the same, but then they think, oh, that person is also the person that I could never identify before. But now that I see him on TV in that context, I'm sure it was him. So when I heard that, I was like, man,
yeah.
As a defense attorney, I would make an issue of that right away. And now it turns out that there's questions about his guilt for all those extraneous offenses. I'm like, man, whether or not you're in favor of the death penalty, we're gonna execute people in this state for based on a future dangerousness theory related to offenses that person has not been convicted of. And may not have committed.
Right.
And to me, I mean, that's just insane. Something's wrong with that system. And even if you're in favor of the death penalty, that would be a good debate to have. And Linda said there were some people at the Huntsville unit right now, not protesting, but in favor of the death penalty.
Mm.
I've talked to those people before, actually, last summer I was there.
Right, right.
And I asked them, we actually had a very decent conversation for about 15 minutes. And I asked him, why are you here? you know, out of interest. I'm just interested, curious. Why are you here? And they said, well, you know, we just, there's all these people protesting. We just want to let everybody know that we agree with what's happening here. And I said, okay, well, that's your right. You know, I'm not going to try to persuade you to not be in favor of the death penalty. But I did tell them a thing or two about my experiences with the death penalty. And I told them about Clintus' case and other wrongful convictions. And they were actually open to listen to that. And they said they were going to look it up. Now, I don't know if those women are still there tonight. If I was there, I would definitely try to talk to them again. Because, yeah, I think if you talk to each other and show some mutual respect, we might be able to still teach those people something. So that's what's on my mind, Marlo.
Hey, Clint, how do you think we can humanize the people on death row a little bit better? What should we be doing? Clint. Well, let's see if we can get somebody else's opinion on that. How should we...
He's muted. He needs to unmute himself. I think he's muted.
How should...
Yeah, Clint muted himself.
How should we humanize those who have pending sentences of capital punishment? What should we be doing to make this not this cut and dried Hollywood feeling that everybody seems to have? You know, there is no 11th hour. The governor is not going to call. How do we explain that these people have spent years and years behind bars and are different people from the ones who had the worst days of their lives when they were accused of these crimes?
Well, first of all, Marlo, my concern right now for Jedediah is my hope that somehow, I think that the DNA issue on the future danger is a critical one that ought to be reviewed and ought to be reviewed in this case. This man should not die without the opportunity to get that done. The second thing is, when a person is accused of charged with capital murder, that's about as huge a defense burden on any defense lawyer. And they appoint, most of the people don't have the kind of money that is required to defend a capital murder case. In Harris County, they will appoint a capital certified lawyer, normally a second chair. But bringing capital murders are really, the state brings the power of the entire institution against that person. They've got the lawyers, they've got the investigators, they've got on hand right there. Whereas the defense, I think, we need to have an institutional. I was pleased to have the public defender's office, but I don't think we need a public defender's office for most of the offenses in Harris County and most of Texas. Mm-hmm. But an institutional capital defense organization is really something that I think would be very helpful to be able to root out all of the possible defenses without having to go back to the judge asking for money from time to time, and just having to, if you pick up a capital murder case, if you're serious about doing a capital murder case between two lawyers, you have to shut your practice down.
It's just
too much for one or two lawyers to do.
Yeah.
And that's the problem I see with the way we defend capital murder. And this lawyer saying, I'm just burned out, is understandable, because handling one of those cases will burn a lawyer out. It just takes all of your time. And if you're doing other cases during that same time, which most lawyers have to do that if you're taking appointments,
right?
That makes it difficult for you, even with your best of intention and best of skills.
Right.
Makes it difficult because the state has, again, the whole institution to bring against you. And right now they're trying to put a man to death for
they're trying
extraneous, unadjudicated offenses. And that's the primary reason he's there.
Yeah, that is the primary reason that he is there, and the primary reason why we are here, although we are coming to an end right now. Thanks, everyone. That is the close to this very unusual edition of Execution Watch for Tuesday, October the 10th, 2023. Our next scheduled broadcast date is Wednesday, October 29th, as Texas prepares to send William Speer into the death chamber in Huntsville, Texas. Execution Watch will cover the state-sanctioned killing beginning at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time with our live news coverage. A special reminder to those in the Houston area and friends of both Execution Watch and the Prison Show, today is the last day to RSVP for the Celebration of Life to be held on October the 22nd for legendary parole and post-conviction attorney Bill Happern, who passed away in August. We welcome your opinions on social media and beyond. Go to executionwatch.org to learn more about the death penalty and executions in the state of Texas, and please subscribe to our mailing list. You can also find us on Facebook. Just search Execution Watch and past shows on YouTube. We can now be found on Twitter as well, and we'd appreciate the follow. Our thanks again to the entire Execution Watch crew. Legal analysts Larry Douglas and Merrill Pontier, reporters Linda Snyder and Clinton Young, video director Mark Pertle, technical director Otis McClay, engineer Howard Reynolds, social media Sarah Sheridan and Elise Bench, executive producer Elizabeth Ann Stein. Just a reminder that your support is critical to keeping this broadcast commercial-free and on the air. Please pledge your support for Execution Watch at kpft.org. And if you're listening live right now on 90.1 FM, stay tuned for Jazz in All Its Colors with Sinbad. We will post, if the execution goes through, the video on our YouTube channel. This has been Execution Watch. I'm Marlo Blue. Good night.
Don't you know they're killing people?